CQ, 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 and welcome to Ham Radio and More. I'm Len Winkler, KB7LPW. Today's show is sponsored in part by MFJ Enterprises, Ken Nichols of Earnhardt Automobile, W7FG Vintage Manuals, and Amateur Radio Trader Magazine. Our phone number, as usual, is area code 602-678-1234. That's 602-678-1234. Can't ask for too much of an easier number than that. 602-678-1234. Today, we're going to have as my guest Tom Gibson, WA3 Highway, or HWY, and we're going to be talking about a particular camp. We're going to be talking about young people in amateur radio. We're going to talk about a little about education. We're going to talk a whole lot, actually, about amateur radio and kids. In fact, there's a lot of young people news going on today. I want to bring you up to date on a couple of pieces of information. Number one, for those of you who are not listening to this show live, we are live every Sunday at 2200 UTC on WWCR 5070. But if you're listening to us on a tape delayed basis, that's fine. Please don't call if you are. However, if you want to hear the show and you're not able to hear it on shortwave for whatever reason, although of course you obviously are hearing it now on shortwave, but we are, thanks to Tapper Audio, Tapper, the Tucson Amateur Radio Club, which is really the group that started Packet as we know it, and the TNC2s. If you're wanting to hear us on real audio on the internet, you can certainly do that. It's usually up there on the site within 24 hours of our first live broadcast. And all you have to do is go on the internet to www.tapr.org/HRM. Again, www.tapr.org/HRM for Ham Radio More. And you can listen to each of our shows, which now is on the Real Audio site, courtesy of Tapper. So thank you, Greg Jones, president of Tapper, and for all the work you've done in putting us there. Now, again, our phone number is 602-678-1234. Now, remember, I don't answer the phone until you're going to go on the air, so there's no worry that you're going to have to hold on forever and pay outrageous phone bills, because just let it ring and ring and ring until I pick it up, and then you'll be right on the air. Today, not today, but, well, actually, the Boy Scout Jamboree is starting this week, and we're going to probably talk about that a little bit, but according to Bill Pasternak of Newsline, WA6ITF, which also has a youth involved, Brian Milshowski, N5ZGT, was named the 1997 Young Ham of the Year. And Brian is of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he is 17, the son of Janet and Patrick. And he's just graduated from high school. He'll enter the University of New Mexico in the fall, enrolling in the School of Engineering with the career aspiration of possibly being in the astronaut corps. Maybe he could be one of the first ones on Mars. Who knows? Brian was nominated by Jay Miller, WA5WHN, very active ham, by the way, who has known Milshowski since he was first licensed. Miller calls Brian a truly dedicated young adult who uses his amateur radio hobby as a service to benefit his fellow man. And Joe Knight, W5PDY, the ARRL section manager for New Mexico, said to the selection committee that he had the opportunity to know and observe Brian in his enthusiastic quest for knowledge and learning in the varied areas of amateur radio engineering and science and his support of youth all over the state of New Mexico. As a general class licensee, he was first licensed at the age of 12. Brian has acted up on all hams and modes, with the exception of slow scan TV, satellites, and microwave. He's a particular excitement for QRP and has been part of a record-setting long-distance QSO. As World Radio's magazine youth columnist, He's encouraged other ham radio operators to find their own place in the hobby, and he's served as an Elmer to many young boys and girls. And also, the Boy Scout of America has played a large part in Brian's life. He's an Eagle Scout and a member of the Order of the Arrow. In addition to serving as the post president, he was a senior patrol leader in the 1997 National Jamboree Troop. And he's done so much else I think he's a worthy recipient, of course, for the Newsline Amateur of the Year. So congratulations to Brian. Okay, now let's talk to Tom Gibson, WA3HWY, who is my guest today, and who has been a ham for, I think it's 30-some years, with an advanced ham class license. He's the president and trustee of the camp. You're going to have to pronounce this for me. Is it Shohola?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, the Camp Shohola Amateur Radio Club, and which has their own call sign, WB3DGR. Actually, they've been around for more than 20 years, and it's the only amateur radio club licensed to a call sign licensed to a summer camp in the USA, and it's responsible for licensing more than almost 200 ham radio operators. Well, Tom, welcome to Ham Radio and More.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to talk to you and all of your listeners around the world.
Okay, well, first of all, tell me a little about where the camp is located and how long it's been around and how it got its start.
The camp is located in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. We are way up on the northern end, up near the town of Lackawaxen, and it was actually founded as a lumber camp back in the 1870s and became one of the first summer camps in the country and probably the world, actually being founded in 1925. All of the founders obviously are dead by now, but the man who founded it was Carl Hummel, and it's presently owned by the Barger family. It's a family-owned and operated camp.
Okay, so it is privately owned, and obviously they're hoping to make a few pennies on it. How many kids enroll each and every year?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Go ahead.
How many kids enroll each and every year?
Right now we have about 150, and we fluctuate between 150 and 160.
Uh-huh, and their ages?
Ages are between 7 and 15 years old.
Okay, and do they come from all over the country, or are they mostly in the Pennsylvania area?
Actually, they're from all over the world. We have campers here from Russia, I think the Ukraine, Japan, France, Germany, Spain, a number of them from Mexico. We are truly an international camp.
Okay, well, obviously, being around for more than 70 years now, well-known, good group of people, 150, 175 kids, all age brackets. What kind of activities do you have there? What differentiates you from the normal camp, let's say?
Well, in addition to all of the regular camp activities, is a traditional summer boys camp. We also have a sister camp, too, Camp Natimus, which is located just 12 miles away in Milford, Pennsylvania. About 27 years ago, I started a program in communications and technology. And the purpose in doing that was that as a camper, I was a little disappointed with some of the programming at the camp. And what I would like to do was do something that was technologically or radio oriented. So I started some programs in radio broadcasting, electronics, amateur radio. And then since then, we've also augmented with a number of additional activities in the related area, especially recently internet and computer programming. Actually, computer programming started in 1982. We were one of the first.
Whoa.
So it's an interesting mix of activities.
Yeah, 1982 with computers compared to today, that you really were on the forefront of technology.
Yeah.
Okay.
We like to think so, although as we look back on it, it was in its infancy and we were too.
Okay, well, 1982, I think that was right before the IBM AT came out. I think it was still the XT.
Yeah, and we were using Timex and computers. These are little 1K computers that we actually assembled ourselves.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I remember, you know, we were thrilled to death to have 1 meg of hard drive, let alone a hard drive, period, you know.
Hard drive, we used to record on audio tape.
Yeah, well, now that's going back even further. Now they're going to go back to the old, the Univacs, where, you needed 50,000 square feet to do one-tenth of what a laptop does now.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way it is, although we're glad that we've advanced with the rest of the world.
Right. Well, now that's a good point. Has amateur radio advanced to the rest of the world? Okay, so you started the ham radio program at the camp, and why exactly did you do that?
Actually, I started the ham radio program even earlier than that. I started it back in 1966. But unfortunately, I had to take a four-year hiatus and did some time for Uncle Sam down in Southeast Asia.
Ooh.
But the intent was to just just to show the boys what amateur radio was. And for our first 20 years, it was really very popular. There was one year I had 35 boys signed up in three different activity classes and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I was licensing novices and techs and even a couple of generals. I had one boy that made novice this first year. His call sign right now is K3IS. His name was Steve Fogelman, but he changed it. I forget what he is now. And also Andy Silverman did the same. He is was N3HR.
Mm-hmm.
But both of those boys came one summer not knowing anything about ham radio, and the next summer they came back and they were both extra class.
Whoa.
And I believe they were written up in QST. As a matter of fact, I know Andy was, and I think Steve Fogelman was too.
Well, that's pretty good. I think that some of the problem today is there's just not enough being done to get the young into amateur radio. It seems, obviously your camp is. I talked to Joe Fairclough. Actually, I talked to Joe yesterday from the radio club of Junior High School 22 in New York City. I saw him. He happens to be in Fort Tuthill, Arizona right now for our Fort Tuthill Ham Fest, and I was up there yesterday in Flagstaff, and so I was talking to him. And so with him and Rosalie White and, I'm forgetting some of the people, my brain is not working. But anyway, a whole bunch of different people that are using amateur radio in the schools, etc. Other than that, it just seems that, like, young people are not flocking to this hobby like they used to. And you're saying that you're the only camp that's actually doing this on a continued basis, that have their own call sign. That doesn't bode well either for a lot of kids getting involved.
Well, we've had the same problem here, and that is that in the past...
Carol Perry, I'm sorry. I just had to remember her name.
Okay.
Carol Perry.
In the past 7 years, we've really had a significant drop in interest in ham radio.
In the last how many years?
I blame the Internet.
In the past how many years, Tom?
In the past 7 years, we've had a drop in interest in ham radio.
Okay.
We're down to one class now. I had five boys last month, and this month I only have three that are interested in ham radio. So it's the interest is not as acute as it was 10 years ago, or especially 15 or 20 years ago, and I think the Internet's done it, and I have to agree with them somewhat that the intrigue of communicating and with clear, concise, interesting communication over the Internet really does have something going for it. Ham radio, there are a lot of contacts you can make out there that are pretty boring.
Well, now, of course, I had a forum that I produced along with Bill Pasternak at the Dayton Hamvention this year, and one of the four topics that we discussed is the Internet killing amateur radio. And Bill Pasternak started out with a tirade saying there's no question about it, the Internet is killing amateur radio. As soon as he said that, and as soon as the other person went through their little 4-minute dissertation, the audience really just wanted to devour Bill and say he's crazy. There is no way that the Internet is destroying amateur radio. In fact, it's helping amateur radio by getting more and more people involved in amateur radio, because people who are on the Internet see all these people who are using their ham call signs, who are posting about amateur radio information. They're talking about shortwave. And I mean, there was so much information coming in that 30-minute segment of my program that you would think the internet was the greatest thing since sliced bread. I have to say that I sort of agree with Bill Pasternak that the and with you that the internet is definitely having a an effect, and most of it negative, to amateur radio.
Well, I can tell you here from the front line that, yes, there are campers that are going in and playing with the internet and surfing, and they are seeing a little bit about ham radio, but it's very rare that they will get onto a site where ham radio operators frequent. And I can tell you that the interest in ham radio is much lower, and the interest in the internet is very high. There is a continual line for getting on internet computers, but yet trying to even get one or two people to walk into the ham shack is very difficult. Mm. So there's a report right here from the front line at Camp Shohola.
Okay, well, let's take a phone call, and our phone number is 602-678-1234. Can't get an easier number than that, 602-678-1234. And you're on Ham Radio and More. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, good evening, Len. This is Paul, K1PKZ, calling from Van Alstine, Texas again.
How you doing?
Hi, a pleasure to speak with you guys. I think you've touched on something interesting. I think no one can deny the fascination with the internet and how effective it is and how it enhances communication, etc. But, and I'm just going back to when I got my ticket now, that was 37 years ago yesterday. My gosh, I hate to say that. But that's
congratulations.
How long it was. Thank you. I consider them golden years, and I hope there's another 37 coming. I've had a lot of fun with it. But there's something magical. There's a magical fascination about sending signals through the air. I can't tell you what it is, and I can't really put my finger on it. But I'll remember to my dying day that the first time I heard my call coming back at me. And there were no telephone lines. It was going from my transmitter through the air. There was nobody. There was no gatekeeper, such as what you have when you're in an internet service. If somebody doesn't like what you're doing, or if they don't particularly approve, or they don't like the service, or whatever, they can shut you down. None of that. It was just you and the individual on the other end, and the ether in between. And there was something magical about sending signals through the air. And I can't. But is that
magic still there, Paul? I mean, because
it is for me.
Well, because you know, you can go on the internet, and you can go in a chat room, or you can go on voice.
And that's great. I wouldn't decry that for a
no. But you never know who you're going to find there either. I mean, you can basically do a CQ and see who you're going to get.
Well, then again, you go on the air. I can remember firing up on 10 meters and thinking the band was closed with my little 1 watt. I had a little Heathkit tenor going way back when. Little 1 watt output or so transmitter, and calling CQ and working a guy in South Africa when I thought the band was dead. That's the kind of you just never know.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet is a very sure and secure thing. You pick up the phone, you make the call to the server, whatever. You punch in the appropriate. And I'm not disparaging the communication by any means. I think it's great. I think it's a great service. I think we need both, but I guess maybe what I'm saying is we need to start appealing to the people that are interested and fascinated with the idea of communicating through the air. What do you think, guys?
Tom?
Or am I hitting a resonant chord or what?
I was not able to copy all of that.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, his question is basically, is there a way to hit the people who find it fascinating to communicate through the air?
Yes, it is, and we have done that here, and what we do is we bring them in and we try and dazzle them with some of the equipment. We do have some, we have computers online, but they seem to be frustrated by the lack of consistent contact, and today's young people seem to want instant gratification, and as all of us know, you just don't get that in ham radio. It takes a lot of patience.
Right, it does. Absolutely. You're very weak here, too, Bob. I guess it's the lines or whatever, but you're very weak here, too. But you're right. It does take a lot of patience, and it requires, I think, a lot more effort. On the other hand, it's the getting there is worth doing. You know, you just have to prove to people that it's worth the effort that it requires. And I don't know how you do that. How do you inspire people? What we need, I think, are good teachers too. Len, any thoughts on that?
Well, I like to think that we do some good teaching here. We make an effort to do that, but it's still, even with good teaching, it seems that the boys just don't get that instant gratification, and despite the quality of the teaching, they're not actively involved with the program.
Maybe part of the problem, Bob, is those two words, instant gratification. We've become so used to that today. We have to show them somehow that there is something out there that maybe can't be acquired instantly, but is worth the quest. And maybe that's it. And also, a lot of young ladies are getting involved in amateur radio. We need to encourage that also. I think both sexes can become involved. Well, it used to be strictly a male activity.
I'll tell you, when you know, I used to be, I still am a member of many clubs locally, and one of the clubs, the Scottsdale Amateur Radio Club, back in 1990, they had like 6, 7, 8, 9 people who were on a list called Elmers.
Yep.
Who you could call, who they would help in all kinds of aspects of amateur radio, all the different aspects, whether you wanted to learn about contesting or Morse code, you know, one of my favorite issues, or whatever it is that you wanted to learn.
Yeah, well, where are they?
Well, we're not going to go there right now. But whatever it is that you wanted to be interested, whatever you were interested in, there was an Elmer to assist you. Today, the Elmer list is null and void. It doesn't exist. Those people are off somewhere. I have no idea where. So that in just a few short years, the last few short years, I have seen an evaporating of the Elmer pool. I have also noticed that the new ham, the new no-code ham, more than anything, is not a joiner. They are an independent soul. That doesn't make them bad. Independence is not bad for anything, but they tend not to join the new clubs or any clubs. They tend to be off on their own. Yesterday at the Ham Fest, attendance was down. There were more commercial vendors at Flagstaff than there was ever in the past, commercial vendors, yet there were fewer swap tailgaters than usual. And, I mean, we usually get between 2,500 and 3,500 people in the 3 days that Ham Fest takes place. But the vendor list was up, but the number of attendees was definitely down. The number of tailgaters was definitely down. When I was talking to some presidents of some of the local clubs, and we have here in the Phoenix area maybe 8, 9 local general-purpose ham clubs, one of the guys I was talking to, which had as recent as 3 years ago over 100 members, his club, he says he's lucky if there's 25 or 26 due-paying members now, and of that, 10 to 15 show up each and every month. That's a pretty sad state of affairs.
We can change that, guys.
How do you change that?
We really need to change that, because there are a lot of us that are interested in helping people, and we've got to start getting together and communicating via means such as this program. I'd love to see someone. All right, I'm up here in North Texas. I've held an extra for over 30 years. I'd be happy to help with the examiner program if I can. I'd be delighted to be of help with that if it's at all possible. If I can be of assistance to someone, I'd be delighted to do that. And I think that we need to have a clearinghouse where we can all come to and say, hey, look, here's what I have, there's what I am, and can I help? Is there anything I can contribute? Rather than what's in it for me. I guess a lot of it goes right down to how self-centered some of us are, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I say us, I'm saying as a community. We all have to start looking toward preserving what we have and improving what we have. And the only way you're going to do that is to encourage new people to become involved and show them that, yeah, there's fun to be had out there. And not only that, there's a lot of interesting things that can be learned that can enhance and enrich your whole life if you get involved with them.
Well, I agree now, but I don't know if there's enough people like you that are willing to get out there and help. Like I say, six, seven, eight Elmers no longer exist at this one club.
Right.
There just are none. I mean, these guys are just going the way of dinosaurs.
Well, we need to motivate. See, we have to, like...
Well, how do you motivate those people who know?
Well, for one thing, you got to let them know that there's a place where they can come and say, look, I'm available. Somebody's got to be keeping a list somewhere.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that is happening.
That's exactly it.
I think that you're also finding that in clubs that there's a nucleus of 5 to 6, 7, maybe only 2 or 3 people who are keeping that club afloat.
Glenn,
who seem to do
like
everything.
That.
Oh, I understand
it's,
that.
It's but, always. I was president years ago of the Hampden County Radio Association. We had a couple of hundred people in our club when I was. When I was involved in the politics, and I can tell you there was a small cadre of people that ran things, and very well too, I might add, but the point is that most of the guys were just happy to come to the meetings and drink
donuts,
and we had lecturers, you know, we used to bring lecturers in
right.
about various things, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, but they want to be entertained.
Well,
that, and they don't want to participate.
Well,
you can't force them.
We had technical lecture. We used to get representatives from the manufacturers to come down and talk to us. But again, you got to be able to promise them an audience, and that's so you got to get people to come down and do that. I just wonder if people are still interested in learning about the equipment and things like that these days, or do they just want to get on and talk? I don't know. That's something I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for calling.
Well,
you brought
a real
up a
pleasure.
Lot of good...
And, Bob, good luck with the camp. I wish I'd have had a summer camp to go to like that when I was 15 or 14 or whatever. Boy, that would have been just the greatest. And I sure hope it's very successful for you for many years to come.
Well, thanks a lot. It's really nice to hear you say that. And there have been a number of others that have said that over the years, too. I do know a few other camps that do have amateur radio programs, but as far as I know, we are the only one that is actually licensed by the FCC with our only call sign licensed to the summer camp itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great effort. I hope we can help you somehow.
Okay. Thank
well,
you.
With all the listeners out there, I'm sure we'll probably hear something. I hope I get a chance to give a web address here later on.
Oh, of course.
Web address and also phone numbers, whatever addresses for those that may not have a computer that might want to contact you, too.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
My pleasure,
okay.
Gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
73.
Okay, 602-678-1234 is our phone number, 602-678-1234. And, you know, bringing up lots of points, lots of interesting points, and, you know, we're talking about basically the state of amateur radio, and, I mean, that is the question, keeping it interesting, keeping it topical, current people coming into the hobby, because it seems that... you know, you're having a whole lot of silent keys and not a whole lot of new blood that is really taking the hobby and doing things with it more than getting a license and using it for 2 meters, although I don't think that that's necessarily bad. I think that there's just so much to be explored, but I'm not sure that people who get into the hobby today have someone to help them learn the rest of it.
Now, I think for a lot of us, there's a real tendency not to want to get involved. I mean, we see this with this litigious society that we've developed in this country, and we don't want to get involved, whether it's accidents or trying to help somebody out, because if you help them out and the kid happens to touch your antenna while you're transmitting, you have some horrendous lawsuit, and I understand the fears of some of our active Elmers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sad, no question about it, and but I'm glad that you're doing something, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that and specifics about it, and also a little about the Scouts, because I guess that's a big thing going on right now. So let me tell you a little bit about MFJ Enterprises. There's no question that MFJ makes some great products, and let's talk about one of them, the MFJ 418. Which is the pocket size Morse code tutor. You can learn Morse code fast almost anywhere. Well, in fact, you can learn it anywhere. The LCD display lets you check your copy instantly. There's easy no-code beginners courses. You can take, and it will all take you all the way beyond extra class. It has a customized practice, plain English QSOs, word recognition mode. It has an interactive mode. Your settings are automatically saved, ready to use next time. It has a very large LCD display, which you can read words, letters, numbers, and punctuations in plain English as code is being sent. It's a powerful sound and sight aid. You can check your copy. The LCD has two lines, okay, and it 32 huge, one-quarter-inch high-contrast characters. It's a pocket-sized tutor. It fits in your shirt pocket. It's even smaller than a package of cigarettes. It weighs less than 5.5 ounces. And there's no way that Morse code tapes or videos or anything is going to compare to this, because with those tapes, you tend to memorize what you hear. There's no memorization with this because it's so much as is random. You can have fixed or random length groups. You can change the speed from 3 to 55 words per minute. There's no instruction manual even needed. It's just so simple. And it's $79.95 or less, depending on where you get it. So, the MFJ-418. You can get it at your local dealer or call MFJ directly at 1-800-647-1800. That's 1-800-647-1800. The MFJ-418, the new pocket-size Morse code tutor. Now, Ken Nichols, WA7HXZ, who's the fleet director of the largest Dodge dealer in the world. But Earnhardt is more than just Dodge. They sell Fords, they sell Kias, they sell Hyundai, they sell trucks. You name it, these guys got every dealership you want. So if you're looking for any new vehicle, anything, you give Ken Nichols a call. Now, you may say, if you live in upstate New York, why the heck do I need to call Phoenix, Arizona? Well, I'm telling you that think back to the last time you purchased a car, okay? Did you enjoy buying that car? I'll bet you there's very few of you out there who actually enjoyed buying your last vehicle. When you call Ken Nichols, you will enjoy buying a car from him. All you have to do is call him at 1-800-497-8740, extension 580, and say, Ken, hey, I want the new Dodge Ram pickup, whatever, Ram truck, and you want it with the cab, you want it with leather, you want air conditioning, you want power this, power that, blah, 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 blah. He'll tell you the list price and his discounted price right there on the phone. There's no hassle. There's no boiler room tactics. There's no hard arm, negotiations back and forth, strong arm. It's easily handled that way, and you'll have the car dropped off at a dealer near you. It's so simple. All you do is go in, sign the papers, drive the car out, or the truck, or the van, or whatever. Give Ken Nichols a call. He's got the best service and the lowest prices going. If you're looking to buy a new vehicle and you don't call him, you're making a big mistake. That's Ken Nichols. And here's the phone number, 1-800-497-8740, extension 580. 1-800-497-8740, extension 580. Ken Nichols. Fleet prices really direct to you. Okay, you're listening to Ham Radio and More. I'm Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and today my guest is Tom Gibson, WA3HWY. We're talking about Camp Shohola, but we're also talking about young people and amateur radio. And without young people, Tom, there is not going to be any amateur radio.
That's certainly the truth. We've understood that for many years up here, and since you brought up the Boy Scouts, I'll also mention that I am an active adult scout leader. I'm the Cub Master of Cub Scout Pack 34 in York, Pennsylvania. And if anybody wants a little bit more information, if you'll hop on the internet and just go onto Yahoo and do a search for Thomas Gibson, you can hit the home pages and see what's there. The address is a little bit long because I have it where I work at York College, but there is an address on there, and you can check out and see what we've been doing, both in the Boy Scouts and up here at Camp Chihola.
Well, I would recommend that if people want to get in touch with you, and we can, again, give this information later in the show, but if people want to get in touch with you, their best bet would be to send you email, and then you can just email them back with web page addresses.
Yes, and let me go ahead and give that one, too, because
sure.
The email is a simple address.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simply tgibson@ycp.edu. That stands for York College of Pennsylvania, and then obviously that's an educational institution. tgibson@ycp.edu. And I try to answer all my email. I generally get about 80 a day for one reason or another because I'm involved in a number of organizations, including the Intercollegiate Broadcasting System, which I hope we can discuss briefly a little bit later on, too. But particularly people that are interested in the programs that we've been running up here at camp for the last 25 years. So we'd be interested in seeing what your listeners have to say about some of these programs and working with young kids. I know you were going to say something about the Boy Scouts. I know I was a Boy Scout as a youth and a Cub Scout and thoroughly support the Boy Scouts of America.
Yeah, well, I had an email from Joe WB, I like it, W5BSA, actually it's AA5BD, and Joe Ross, and he's with the Boy Scouts at Fort Apache Hills, and I guess radio at the BSA National Jamboree. The following is a general review, and it's going to operate for 23 hours a day throughout the time that the Scouts will be at the Jamboree, July 28th through August 5th. And the K2 BSA station operation is like field day squared. It's not unusual to rack up, as he says, 5,000 contacts during the Jamboree, with constant pileups every time the station gets on the air. And even with poor band conditions in 1993, they made worked all states within a few days and contacted over 120 foreign countries. In 1989, the total was well over 150 countries. So Scouts have a chance to send a message home through the amateur radio traffic network. In 1993, they handled 2,500 messages from Scouts and about 500 incoming messages. They give volunteer exams, and they've got the merit badge, Midway as he calls it. We have three booths that you can earn your radio merit badge, and additional booth with shortwave listening and kit building and packet ATV and so much more. And the Boy Scout Jamboree is a big, big thing.
Well, they certainly smash our records up here. We had many jamborees up here back when activity was real high. We did real well during the sunspot peaks in the early and mid-70s. We had, we'd set up tables, and the kids would come flocking around and send their voice around the world and got a big kick out of it. And we noticed a change in interest that sort of corresponds with the sunspot cycle, too, which is kind of interesting. But I have seen the Boy Scout radio stations in operation, but I understand they've dropped the amateur radio merit badge. Is that true?
Well, I didn't realize that, because according to this, they still have it. According to this, they have the radio merit. Maybe they just call it the radio merit
That's
badge.
That's what it is now. It's amateur radio. It's just a regular radio, and there are... You can make your qualifications by going to commercial stations and other communication-type devices.
Mm. Well, I know that there...
Maybe somebody out there can call us in and correct us, Lynn.
Okay, well, if there is an amateur radio merit badge instead of just a radio merit badge, sure, give us a call, 602-678-1234, 602-678-1234. It's kind of amazing, depending on what the show topic is, the lines can be jammed or we can be lonesome. But we have so much to cover, it really, if we get calls, great. If not, that's okay, too. You talk about using a lot of computers at the camp, and you do use computers, I would imagine, interfaced with your ham radio?
Actually, we do, and that seems to be one of the major draws. The boys really enjoy tuning into the different types of signals, whether it's RTTY, the old baud dot code, which it's amazing the number of people that are still on ASCII code, packet. and by using some of the different interfaces. And by the way, we do use some of the MFJ products in here too. We use computer interfaces and also the tuners. So we're helping to support your advertiser in that case.
Well, I appreciate that, and so does MFJ. They make some good products.
Yeah, they do. We've certainly enjoyed them, and some of the ones we've had for a number of years too, and they just keep plugging right on away. I know our antenna tuner has been beaten to death by these kids, and it's every once in a while it arcs a little bit, but after the arc's done, it just keeps right on working. So we're in pretty good shape there. But they really seem to enjoy watching the signals coming over on the television screen, because it takes the drudgery, and there's a mystique to these strange sounds in the air. And by the way, we also do some flow scan and copy some weather facsimile and some of the other fax type signals that come over, and they enjoy watching them form on the screen.
Okay, well, I think we've got a couple of phone calls here, so let's see. Let's go to the phones. You're on Ham Radio and More.
Oh, well, very good.
Who are you talking to, and where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Bethesda, Maryland. My name is John Mitchell.
Hi, John.
And I just wanted to say that 14 years ago, Mr. Tom Gibson taught a young kid to get his first novice license as a call sign of KA3HCB. And I'm wondering if Mr. Gibson remembers that.
Tom?
I missed a little bit of that. You're going to have to relay just quickly for me, Len.
What was the call sign again that you said?
KA3HCB.
Do you remember, Tom, a kid about 14 years ago, KA3HCB?
Yes. Was he licensed here at camp?
I wasn't licensed at camp. I did go through the ham radio training at the camp, and then got my license during the school season.
He got his license after the school season, but
yeah,
he took the...
What was the name again?
The name is John Mitchell, Tom.
John Mitchell.
Oh, my God. John Mitchell. John Mitchell's listening. He's one of my all-time best. As a matter of fact, my youngest son, 4 years old, is named Jonathan. And John Mitchell, I want you to know that you had something to do with that. And you better hop on our webpage. Take a look at it and see the family now, because you wouldn't believe what's happened.
My goodness.
We have
definitely fallen out of touch. Actually, I do have a real question, Tom, and I kind of tuned into the station a little late. Out of all the years you've been teaching your radio program, do you know how many hams you have produced out of that program?
What was he asking, the total number?
Total number, yes.
Yeah, we're close to 200, John. I know back when you were in, of course, we had some really large classes and a number of them were interested. But if you were listening to the beginning of the show, you can see that it's dropped off considerably over the years. And this year we're down to just seven boys signed up for ham radio. So the interest seems to have waned somewhat. I hope as the sunspot cycle peaks up that we'll have more.
I hope so.
Are you involved still, John, in amateur radio?
Actually, I've just gotten re-involved in radio.
Mm-hmm.
I've been dormant for about 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And just setting up the home QTH. And, in fact, just got off the air on 40 meters and tuned in your show. And there's Tom Gibson. I thought that was pretty funny. So I had to give a call.
Well, I really appreciate it. I think Tom really appreciates it.
It is so nice to hear voices out of the past like that. And I've noticed the same thing on my webpage, too, that routinely... somebody just happens to do a search, and they see Tom Gibson on either Yahoo or Excite or AltaVista or something, and I get email from people that I haven't talked to in years, and I think it's probably been a good, probably almost 15 years since, or at least 10 since I've heard or seen from John Mitchell. So it's
but you remember him.
Oh, absolutely.
Excellent.
Without question. Very fondly. Good kid.
Okay, John. Well, you made his.
Computers, I think, had a tendency to draw him away a little bit, but I'm glad he's still involved with ham radio.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. The computers did suck me away for a while.
Well, as long as you're back.
Okay. Well, good luck to you.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling, John.
Sure. Thank you.
Bye bye.
That was me.
Okay. That opens up a line. I guess the other one dropped off. 602-678-1234. 602-678-1234. Running a little behind in my promos here, so Hold on a moment, Tom, and we'll be right back to you. W7FG vintage manuals. Well, if we're talking about some older radios and you're looking to get some updated specs in order to, if you've lost your operating manual, your service manual, whatever, and let's say it's a Heathkit. Well, Heathkit's just so big. Let's go to Hammerland for receivers. For instance, you can get a Hammerland FM50A or an HC10, an HQ100, an HQ105TR, an HQ110A, an HQ120X, an HQ129X, and on it goes for Hammerland. Heathkit is pages of stuff. Hallicrafters, General Radio, Gonset, Drake, Dentron, Cushcraft, Collins. Man, is there Collins stuff. Ameritron, Alliance, Alinco, CEI, B&W oscilloscopes, B&K oscilloscopes, CDE rotators, D104 microphone. How about that if you need a manual for that? W7FG Vintage Manuals, which is a small family company, will get your manual out the same day, the next day for sure, and the prices are extremely, extremely reasonable. Some of these are $3. I mean, my goodness, you're talking pennies, and you'll be able to really have the original service or operating manuals for some of the greatest vintage equipment you'd ever want. Palomar, even Radio Shack, RCA, Tokyo High Power, Tentec, Textronic, Swan, you name the company, they have it at W7FG Vintage Manuals. Give them a call at 1-800-807-6146. 1-800-807-6146. Some of the greatest tubes make up their phone number. 1-800-807-6146. You can send them, you can go to them if you want on the internet at www.w7fg.com. www.w7fg.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-807-6146. Ask them for a catalog also. This catalog is just loaded with stuff. W7FG Vintage Manuals. Okay. Amateur Radio Trader Magazine, if you don't have a subscription, give them a call and order one today. It's loaded with information, loaded with equipment used and new, loaded with commercial ads for all the newest stuff. You can see Yaesu's new little tiny dual bander, which is unbelievable. You've got to see it to believe it. And they didn't even pay for that. 1-800-77-HAM-ADS, the phone number to call. 1-800-77-HAM-AD, 1-800-774-2623, Amateur Radio Trader Magazine. And last but not least, let's talk about MFJ 1026. It's an MFJ new product which wipes out interference. It turns your antenna into a directional receiving phased array. The 60 dB null will wipe out interference and noise. It works on all modes, including sideband, AM, CW, and FM. Expose hidden stations. Really good on short wave. You heard me. Works on short wave. So this is a great product. You can dig out a weak station hidden under a powerful one on the same frequency, null out your local AM broadcast station, and underneath you might find an exotic distant station on an island you've never heard of. The MFJ 1026. It's better than phased antennas. The MFJ 1026. Right to MFJ or give them a call. That's the best thing to do at 1-800-647-1800. 1-800-647-1800. 647-1800. They can send you a catalog, and you can find out more about the MFJ 1026. Okay, let's get back to Tom, and let's quickly talk about the Intercollegiate Broadcasting System. What is that? What is your position? What does that have to do with anything?
The Intercollegiate Broadcasting System is an organization of more than 800 college and university radio stations, mostly in the United States, but we do have a few member stations in other parts of the world. And I have been involved with them as a member since 1972, and as a member of the board and on the board of directors, and right now as vice president and director of engineering. And if there are any students out there, college students who are members of college radio stations, you need to get involved. I really encourage it. It's a good organization. We support college radio, always have. And if you can become involved with the Intercollegiate Broadcasting System, attend annual conventions, and receive information that will help make your college radio station a much better organization. So there's my little plug for IBS and Franklin. I can't believe how fast this time's running.
Oh, yeah. Time goes by very quickly. An hour. See, on WWCR, I think the 60 minutes is only 23.
It's truly amazing. If I go down the list here, we've hardly covered anything.
I know. Well, that's what happens on my show. And see, I really like to get phone calls. And when we do, then we never go to lists. We never cover the stuff that we're supposed to cover. I had Paul Shuck on a couple weeks ago about the SETI project, and it was wall-to-wall conversation and about the movie Contact and stuff, and we didn't get the chance to talk about anything that Paul wanted to talk about. So, you know, who knows where we're going to go.
Well, can I give a couple of web addresses?
Please, go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
All right. If anybody's interested in Camp Shohola, particularly if you have kids between the ages of 7 and 15, we are just simply www.shohola, I'll spell that, S-H-O-H-O-L-A, www.shohola.com. And if anybody's out there and would just be interested in our program, just hop on that webpage, and there's all sorts of information for you. I've already given information on how to get in touch with mine. IBS is a real easy one. It's www.ibsradio.org, O-R-G. And if anybody's interested in York College, which we really didn't discuss at all, I manage the telecommunications department at York College, and fortunately that's one of the things that allows me to come up here every summer for the last 37 years. Although some of that was as a camper. I don't want everybody to think that I'm some sort of an ancient dinosaur or something like that. And work with summer camp and summer camp radio because it's certainly enjoyable. York College is www.ycp.edu. Very simply, and I thank you for letting me pass those on if anybody's interested in those organizations.
Oh, absolutely. No. You know, a little off the subject, but actually something that you might want to discuss is, you know, the educational system in the United States in general. You know, you're teaching amateur radio, like I said before, Carol Perry and some of the others that are putting it in schools. But education in general seems to have waned. I mean, sure, it seems that my kids learned advanced math and calculus and all this a lot earlier than I learned it, but it seems that they don't even know what century World War II took place. They have no idea when the Civil War took place. It seems that history has gone. I feel that a lot of the educational values going around is far from what it used to be. And I don't know what can be done about it, but being that you are involved with kids and that you're involved with college broadcasting and stuff, I wonder if you found the same thing or if you totally disagree with me.
No, as a matter of fact, I agree with you completely. And with three boys in the educational system, I see the same problems. However, I feel that we have solved the problem up here at Camp Shohola. and that is that we have a private organization, like many of the private schools in the country, where we do teach some values. And I think that's one of the problems with the educational system, that the teachers have a tendency to shy away from teaching values because it might be related to religious teachings or something, and there's a real hesitancy to become involved with that at all. And up here at camp, we're not afraid to do that. As a private organization, of course, we have every right to do that, and it's teaching those values that I really think help. In particular, in addition to values, we also have some very strong science and related programs where the boys are picking up some of these topics, and they're learning them in a very enjoyable way, that we just don't open a textbook and say, this is what happens when you step up voltage on a transformer. We'll pull out a high voltage transformer and make a Jacob's ladder, or we'll pull out a little hand generator and charge up a capacitor to 300 volts and short it out and watch a big spark. And this is a bad pun, Glenn.
Yeah.
We can really spark an interest in electronics when we use the procedures like that, which I don't think they really have time to do in the public school.
Well, let me ask you, and of course, you probably don't listen to my show on a regular basis. You may have heard it once or twice or not at all, but whatever the case may be, a lot of people who listen know my opinion on the following subject, and we won't go there, but I did want to get yours because I like to hear everybody's. You only have three people that are really involved this particular session in amateur radio in your camp. I'm wondering, is Morse code a deterrent? Do you find that some of the kids would more be involved if there was no Morse code? If instead they could learn computer, how PacTor works, for instance, and thereby getting a general class or advanced license? Or is Morse code, do you think, something they really care to learn? Just your opinion.
Well, it's interesting because there are two movies that have just come out recently, and in both of these movies, there is some Morse code that has been used. And it's not that there is a complete lack of interest, and I agree with you that, yes, I think the code is a mild deterrent, but yet two out of the three boys really are interested in the code, and for that reason, it's not a specific deterrent, but yes, I think in general, there is a tendency for the boys to be a little bit scared because they think it's difficult to learn. But I have a program of teaching the code here where we teach immediately at 13 words per minute, and I essentially guarantee everyone that they will learn the entire code at 13 words a minute in less than 5 hours, and we're usually successful.
In less than 5 hours?
That's right.
They're going to know 13 words per minute. They're going to be able to pass a test in 5 hours.
I'm not necessarily saying that they're going to pass the test, but we don't have this hump problem, and I have had boys pass the test in 5 hours. Now, yeah, that's probably being a little idealistic, and it's pushing it, but it can be done. It truly can, and it's not that difficult to learn the code. I think it's the mental block that really is the big hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
And we do use the code. We enjoy it.
Okay. Well, we don't have time, number one, to discuss it. So
opinion, because I see it on the bottom of the email. and I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying that yes, I think it's an antique form of communication. It certainly is not useful in today's digital world, and I don't think it should be required, but as long as there is an interest, I don't think we should deny it to anybody who wants to use it.
And I would agree with you wholeheartedly, and I support a particular portion, a partition of the bands, which would become CW only. I have no problem with that, Mr. Fist's organization. I have no problem with that. You just stay, you keep your CW off my voice privilege part, and I promise I won't come to your CW portion, and don't force me to learn that stuff. Okay. anyway.
Leave it at that way, huh?
Yes. I'm really glad that we talked about this. Every so often I do a show with about young people and ham radio, and really it's sad. Some people say, why don't you do more shows about the kids, and why don't I have the Young Ham of the Year on and everything else? I've had them on each and every year, and I just don't get much response from the listeners. For some reason, a young person gets on the air, and they just don't respond. The people don't respond, the older hams, like they should, in my opinion. And I think we alienate a lot of the younger people. I know my daughter got her ham license when she was 8 years old. She's 16 almost now, and her response is, there's nobody to talk to. I have nothing in common. And
I have to agree with her.
Right, and unfortunately, that is where I think the problem is.
There are certainly a lot of dinosaurs out in ham radio, and unfortunately, they're dying out. And as they leave us and we get more silent keys, the ham bands are becoming emptier.
They sure are. And I was listening to Chris Emily yesterday from the ARRL at the Ham Fest, and he was talking about losing more UHF, VHF spectrum because of lack of interest, lack of use. And whether we like it or not, numbers are important or we will lose the bands. So,
certainly agreed. And I guess you're probably about ready to wrap it up, so I'd certainly like to say to all your listeners, thanks for listening in. I hope everybody enjoyed a little bit and learned a little bit about what we're doing up here at Camp Shohola in our efforts to keep amateur radio alive. What's that tone mean? 1 minute to go.
That means I got 60 seconds.
That's the 60-second tone. So, we enjoy what we do. I hope that you hear my enthusiasm as we go through and discuss this. The call with John Mitchell I thought was just very enjoyable. I haven't been years since I've heard his voice, and I hope he calls me after the show.
That would be neat.
Yes, it would.
Well, Tom Gibson, WA3HWY, I appreciate from Camp Shohola for you being my guest today, and I do hear your enthusiasm. We need more people like you, like Paul from Texas, and people like that, Carol Perry and the like, to keep promoting amateur radio to the young people. And, of course, that is what this show is all about. Next week, we're going to have open lines. I'm going to be here broadcasting some of my sarcasm and editorial comment, and we're going to hope for your input. So until next week, for Tom Gibson, I'm going to say, please support my supporters. In 73, I'm QRT.